The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Max Rushton. Welcome to Football Weekly. Jimbo is away. He is covering the world's strongest man in South Carolina, which is clearly then a better gig than this one. So while he is watching Olaf Thurgesson dragging a speedboat across a field with his teeth in a big harness, I'm back today and on Thursday. And thanks for this tweet from Ashley Smith, who just says, regards me hosting this, I look forward to hearing what new fixtures and fittings you've bought for your flat. So rest assured, we'll discuss both the state of my flat and any brushes I may or may not have had with minor celebrities, because judging from the blog last time I was here, you loved listening to that. Also on today's show, we will talk about these things. That miss, is it the worst of all time? Is Torres now back? Lampard taking off, is it the end for Frank? Roberto Mancini says he needs more players after drawing at Fulham, despite spending £1 trillion in the window. Liverpool, were they rubbish or are Spurs actually quite good? We will talk to Sid in Spain. Barca score 8, Real lose, and lots of people fall over. And we'll cover everything else that matters, including Cambridge's heroic point at tabletop in Gateshead on Saturday, which I'm sure you're all very happy about. Right, I'll introduce the panel today. Barry Glendening, good morning.
Hello, welcome back.
Paul McInnes, nice to meet you. We've never met.
Hello, Max. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Seems, I think we look like we get on.
Yeah, we might well do. We're both wearing sweaters.
Simon Burton,
hello.
Nice to see you. And you've bought a Tupperware box full of cakes.
I've bought cake, yes. And last week was my daughter's birthday, but yesterday was her birthday party. So, so you lucky fellows get to eat the cake that we couldn't force down our greedy gobs.
And producer Ben says, should we talk football? But I'm more interested in, one, what did you get up to? What happens at your, how old is your daughter?
My daughter's 4.
What happens at a 4-year-old party?
We had an unusual party this year because we've just moved into a new house, which is just backs onto some wood. So we thought, why don't we have going on a bear hunt party? Going on a bear hunt is kind of a popular children's book for toddlers.
Right.
So we thought, let's have a going on the bear hunt party. And then
what woods are there? Are there no bears in these woods?
There are no bears in this
woods. Okay, right.
Well, not ordinarily.
All right.
But last week, there's a fancy dress shop at the end of our road, and it's closing down. And my wife goes in to get a couple of costumes for our kids so that they can dress up and have fun, and comes out with a grown-up bear suit. So anyway, yesterday involved me dressing up as a bear. I would recommend, if anyone's up for a slightly weird half an hour or so, dress up in a full head-to-toe bear outfit and go for a walk in the woods, because you get some great looks off people.
How convincing was your costume?
I definitely wasn't a natural bear.
Right.
But okay. I was definitely a bloke wandering around the woods in a bear costume.
I'm surprised you didn't get arrested.
Right, let's talk about football. It was a Super Sunday. I'm not just saying that corporately, but it was really exciting after all the football yesterday. We will start Man United, Chelsea, and that miss. Is it the worst miss of all time? Barry Glendening.
I don't think it's the worst miss of all time, because on a weekly basis, a clip turns up on YouTube of the worst miss of all time. I've seen people miss from the ball was actually on the line, and they've managed to, you know, not score, put it off out off the post or whatever. It was a very bad miss, and it's a shame for Mr. Torres, really, because apart from that, he played quite well. And yesterday was a great chance for him to completely redeem his flagging reputation, because he could have had a hat-trick. In the end, he scored one, set up what was possibly the second greatest miss of all time, from when Ramirez shot straight at De Gea, when perhaps he should have left the ball for Daniel Sturridge. But yeah, it was a pretty bad miss. To miss an open goal from 5 yards is never good.
But don't you think, I mean, I'm trying to find a defence from him. Actually, there aren't that many strikers who would have just seamlessly walked past the goalkeeper like that.
Yeah, he had that back in his game yesterday, didn't he? He had the athleticism and the grace approaching the goal. I think with that chance, he was slightly off balance, slightly angled, slightly gone against him. Still not much of an excuse. I think the Ramirez one was, you could argue, was worse, because he was going straight in on goal and he just lost track of the ball momentarily. I think Fergie afterwards was saying that the pitch was too bobbly, and which was very kind of him. But he lost it, and then rather than being able to get over the ball, he suddenly started falling back and had to get his foot under it. But I wonder where Torres is at in his head. Do you miss that? Is that must be a a switch off.
Surely that's all concentration. I mean, anyone who's played football to any level knows that any one of us, I imagine, would have put that in if we were just complete. If he was totally concentrating just on kicking that ball, he'd have scored.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think it's up there as one of the all-time great misses. I really liked his shimmy that did for the keeper. I thought that I liked a lot of his play yesterday. But he was approaching the ball at quite an acute angle. He had to hit it left-footed. And, there are a couple of feeble excuses. There are plenty of people who've had none.
I just it's kind of the concentration thing. Is that because he's doubting himself and he's thinking about something else, or is it that he's already leaping forward and thinking about how he'll celebrate the goal and then maybe go and score a third? Because he had a couple of other misses, didn't he?
The one he put over the bar, actually, the ball was there, and technically, you know, he was stationary, and he could have just got over that and put it in.
And then the other one where he dodged inside the two defenders and he kind of scuffed it with the outside of his boot and it bobbled wide of the post. They both, to me, suggested that he'd still not confident in his ability to finish. You'd hope that the kind of the other aspects of his game improving will eventually feed into that.
It was kind of interesting in that he was, I think, unfairly maligned for apparently criticising his teammates last week in an interview. People said he said they were old and slow, which isn't actually what he said, but he was, I think, more a indictment of the style of play Chelsea have that doesn't suit him particularly. But yesterday they did play to his strengths, playing the ball, you know, defence splitting passes for him to run onto, and that's, you know, his the two misses came from balls such as that, and the goal kind of as well.
Well, is it more interesting? Is it that Lampard was taken off at half time?
Yeah, I wonder really how Chelsea's midfield three, if they continue with a three, how that's going to line up over time, because they still don't have anybody in that mix who's much of a ball winner. And I think they played Moraes at the base of that three in the end, didn't they? And he got done for one of the goals, and then he was completely out of position for the penalty. He was just running all over the place. I mean, I'm not sure that maybe it's this Romeo guy they've brought in to do that. I think they could really do with having Essien back from injury because he could play like that. Mikel, I don't know, he's still not really proven himself in that position either. And I think that, so you can take out Lampard to give yourself more legs in that department, but you run the risk of leaving yourself exposed.
But it's interesting. I think we all think that Chelsea actually played pretty well in this game. Mata and Sturridge look like really decent players, don't they?
Well, even when...
No, you're shaking your head.
I wasn't sure about Sturridge. Didn't think he had a particularly effective game. I think particularly he was coming inside, bringing the ball onto his left and not delivering much in the way of ball or indeed goal-threatening opportunities. Mata played very well in the midfield three in the second half.
Even when they were 3-1 down, Chelsea, I still thought there was a very good chance they might get something out of the game. And if Torres had scored into that open goal, then they would have had, 10 minutes left to nab an equaliser. And I wouldn't have ruled it out. I thought they played well yesterday, albeit in defeat.
It was astonishing, given that it's Manchester United who are at the top of the league, and Chelsea, one of their main challenges. The number of errors in the game, it was brilliant and entertaining and enthralling, but catastrophically error-strewn for a match between two theoretically top teams.
Do you want a quick stat?
I'd love a stat, yeah.
35%. David De Gea has made a PL-high 28 saves this season, already 35% of Van der Sar's total of 81 in 2010-11.
So he's got more saves to make?
Yeah, they're more open.
Mm. Yeah, they're every visiting team to Old Trafford to have a stat competition with you has had at least 20 shots.
Our old mucker Zonal Marking in his chalkboard today, he pointed out that stat about the number of shots De Gea's faced, but he suggested that it was perhaps something to do with the fact that either rightly or wrongly, De Gea has been fingered by some as a dodgy keeper, and that perhaps teams are trying to test him more often by taking sort of over-ambitious shots from distance.
Just quickly, Ashley Cole's foul on Hernandez didn't look too bad to start with, and then when those replays are slowed down, it looked like a terrible tackle.
I wasn't sure why there was no penalty given for that, so I went off looking
at the rules. At because
rules.
If the ball's out of play, what is it?
Apparently, you technically can't... by definition, fouls do not occur when the ball is out of play. But misconduct may occur. So
hang on. So if the ball's out for a corner and you punch someone in the face in the box, it's a sending off but not a penalty?
Apparently so.
Okay.
But I don't know for certain, and if anyone does, I'd be interested to hear. But yeah. I did check the rule, and it didn't seem particularly clear. So
that's definitely how it happens. Now, I can't remember who it was, but there was a bloke a few years ago who set a new record for being sent off as in the shortest time ever, and he came off the bench while his team were preparing to defend a corner, ran into the penalty area, punched someone, got sent off, and was back off the pitch again before the corner was taken.
How angry do you have to be? I love that. That's
so
brilliant.
So just lost it.
It had been boiling up for hours.
He was obviously sent on with the, take him out, and took it a bit too literally.
Right, let's talk about Fulham City. I didn't see the highlights of this because my Sky Plus broke. I went to bed. I'd beat my housemate Gabby in a battle for whether we watched Spooks or Downton Abbey. We watched Spooks.
Which did you want to watch?
I wanted to watch Spooks. Downton Abbey didn't do much for me, got to say.
I've Sky Plus'd both.
Have you?
Yeah.
Spooks is a good Harry Pearce episode. So I missed the Fulham City game. I've seen one of Aguero's goals. But Mancini today saying he needs more midfielders.
Hold on a second. Spooks was on at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And Man City Fulham was on at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, but it wasn't on telly.
Ah, right, okay.
Because it was Liverpool, Spurs and...
Do you get your Sky Box fixed for free because you work for them?
I do, yes. Well, my Sky Plus didn't work, so I missed Match of the Day too. But look, Mancini says he needs more midfielders. Milner, Johnson, Barry, Nasri, Hargreaves, Silva, De Jong, Yaya Toure. They've got other midfielders.
Clearly he's down to the bare bones.
I know, but I mean, he's got a couple of injuries. But is that Mancini being ridiculous?
I should recall Michael Johnson from loan at Leicester or wherever he is. But it's a bit churlish. Just when you've kind of dropped your first points, maybe save that for after the going on a mini bad run or something. But one bad result, come on. Fess up to it. Your team switched off.
And I mean, Fulham aren't a terrible side, are they? I mean, they've not played well so far this season, but aren't they in a false position?
Sid Lowe, you might want to ask him about this. He's been giving Danny Murphy a lot of man love on Twitter recently, and I think a lot of their play does go through him, and he's getting on. And if I think he's a fulcrum for them, and if he's not on the top form, then I'm not entirely sure they've got other people who can bring it as much as they used to. Dempsey aside, maybe, but I'm not sure. Duff's a good player, but I think he's probably past his best. So they could struggle, particularly if a lot of these new signings don't bed in, but a lot will depend on how Yol's bargain, Brian Ruiz aside, his bargain basement signings blend in. But he brought this guy Kasami on yesterday on the left, and he was pinging balls into the box the entire time, some great deliveries, which Zamora was getting on the end of. Zamora is also crucial for them.
So we're saying City should have, if City want to win the title, they've got to go to Craven Cottage and win.
Very much so.
From 2-0 up.
From 2-0 up, yeah. So what went wrong?
I didn't see the game, so I don't know.
Thanks, Barry. Expert analysis.
From what little I saw, they thought the game was won. The Silva Aguero axis wasn't kind of retaining the ball as well in the second. Nasri weren't retaining the ball as well in the second half. The Fulham were robbing them of the ball and then hitting it long. And before they had a chance to reorganise, they were occasionally in a bit of trouble. So, that is a mental attitude thing. That is not something that Manchester United would do. Something from yesterday's game that you didn't see from City in the appropriate time was United just physically dominating challenges. Mm-hmm. And that needs to happen. And, City have got players of big stature like Yaya. I thought Yaya looked like he was tiring as well. He didn't look like he was entirely running on full power at the end of the game.
The Zamora goal, it was very nicely taken, but he seemed to be preparing for that shot for quite a long time without anyone diving desperately in front of him. And I would expect most teams in the Premier League, most teams in professional football would have.
Richard Dunn would have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would have, that.
Would have been there in the way, stopped that from happening.
You would have thought Vincent Kompany would have done that as well, but wasn't there to me.
No.
What about Spurs Liverpool then? 4-0, that's a great result for Spurs, terrible for Liverpool. Are Spurs better than we actually thought they were at the start of the season? Are Liverpool rubbish, or was it, if you have two men sent off, then it's game over against someone that good?
Well, Liverpool were appalling in the opening half hour. Really, really shockingly poor, actually. I was surprised by how bad they were. I'm not quite sure why, but then when they went behind to the wonder goal, that was pretty much it, really. And once they had their second man sent off, it was a case of how many are Spurs going to score. And I think Liverpool were kind of lucky because once they went 3-0 up, Spurs just took their foot off the gas and were just going through the motions, really. And I think if they'd been of a mind and were more ruthless, they could have really put the hurt on Liverpool and embarrassed them even further.
And should Spurs have done that? Because when it gets down to who's fourth or fifth, it will go down to things like goal difference. And should Spurs have hammered it? Or they?
Well, I think just if you're an athlete and you're naturally competitive, it's fun to hammer someone in a game, if you can, isn't it? Not that I've ever done it too often in my
life,
but yeah, I'd imagine, you know, it's, come on, let's score 7-8, see how many we can get. That's sort of what Manchester United did against Arsenal.
But 4-0 clean sheet, that's a good that's a good.
Oh, no, I'm not criticising it at all, and I thought Spurs were very impressive.
Yeah,
the ref got everything right, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought he was a bit picky though, a bit too fast and loose with the yellow card. But and it sort of became quickly inevitable, the rate he was throwing out yellow cards in the first half, that people were going to get sent off.
I only saw the highlights. Was Skirtle's bookings for persistent fouling? I mean, was he just getting mugged?
The first was the shirt pull. No, I don't think so. I think the first was pulling the shirt, wasn't it? Which, it is a yellow. That was probably the softest of all of them. And the second was, well, I don't know what he's doing. The pundits were saying after the game, what are you doing? Gareth Bale's got his back to goal, and he's on the touchline, on the halfway line. Why are you diving in?
Yeah. But it seemed to be in an innocuous position. I thought that Adam fouls seemed more
He deserved to go. I mean, Adam did. They both did. But, I suppose some refs are stricter than others. But
I think playing Skirtle at right back against Gareth Bale is a really, really odd decision. And we know that Liverpool have good fullbacks, good young fullbacks, and Dalglish may have wanted to protect them from one of the Premier League's better left-sided midfielders, but he didn't do Skirtle any favours.
Kelly was injured, I think, was he?
Yeah, right. I think he had Flanagan. No, he didn't even have Flanagan on the bench. He had Robinson on the bench, who I think is one of those full-backs. So he didn't have that many options, and he obviously decided that he'd go for the experience. But I think people talk about Skirtle like he's some kind of Vidic. I think I've seen him so often look incredibly weak on the pitch. Positionally, I mean, he was all over the place yesterday, but physically he just can get muscled off the ball really at odd times, and you just think, aren't you supposed to be some Eastern European hard man?
It just seemed that he'd been put in a position and against an opponent that was tailor-made to make him look an idiot. Like, it just wasn't going to be able to do that job.
And then how about Spurs signing Adebayor and Parker? Both looked like brilliant signings. Parker was great again.
Parker's a great player. I remember covering an early game of his at Charlton, and I've followed his progress since. And I think he's a lovely player, and that he is. Like, he was quite an attacking player when he was young, but he has added the defensive element to the game, he has intelligence, and with experience, he is just an excellent Premier League footballer.
Him and Modric are quite. It's small, isn't it? It's a small centre midfield. But they seem to both, and actually Modric, to be fair, seems to be able to put his foot in as well.
Yeah, he's been able to do that for, I think it was about this time last year when Harry first moved him into the middle. And, you know, he's proven himself tough enough physically to be able to cope with that role. And Parker obviously is too. And I think, you know, you just look at swapping Crouch for, presumably that fee will cover Adebayor's wages. I think it's a great swap. I mean, he was talking after the game yesterday, Adebayor, about, you know, the fancy, I'm working very hard and I'm putting my effort in for the club. And it's like, well, we'll wait and see over the course of a season, mate. But
right now,
right now, that's exactly what they needed.
So Suarez was quite showed his nasty side yesterday. He was very petulant. He could have talked himself into a red card.
Stuck out his arm against Parker as well, didn't
he? Yeah, seemed to be blaming everyone but himself for Liverpool's shortcomings, and yeah, it wasn't one of his better games either.
That's more of a worry for Liverpool, because he's a very talented player. People already set him up as the icon of this side. If he starts doing a Tevez, and in shorter order as well, so, you know, by the end of the season he's moaning about ambitions not being met or he's fighting with his teammates, then that whole rebuilding has to start again.
All right, that's part one done. Will you all stay for part two?
Yeah, I want to discuss the Emmys in part two.
Okay, well, I look forward to it. I don't know a lot about them. Right, so we will discuss the Emmys in part two. We'll go to Spain and talk to Sid and do some other stuff. Welcome, everybody, to part two. If somehow you missed part one, but you've just clicked on at part two, which is potentially possible, I don't know, technologically, I'm not James Richardson. He is judging or commentating or presenting on The World's Strongest Man.
No, competing in.
He's competing.
The World's Strongest Man.
Do you know what? Sid Lowe is here as well. Hi, Sid.
Hello, and James is competing in The World's Strongest Man.
Yeah, I think he's one of the disciplines, the contenders for the competition. They have to bench press Jimbo.
Isn't that how many times they can bench him in a minute? Oh, well, I look forward to seeing that.
That's not just Jimbo. Jimbo himself wouldn't be much of a challenge. It's Jimbo with some weights hung from each of his ankles as well.
We shouldn't really mock Jimbo. He's gone all the way to the United States to demean himself in front of a load of very large men who look like they take a lot of steroids, just so we'll have something to watch on Channel 5.
I think it's a really good gig. I'd take it, I think. Invidale did that, and you can't mock Invidale, can you?
You could do a little Gonzo, you know, more forward documentary at the same time about, you know, behind the scenes.
That would be much more fun, yeah. Jimbo and a leotard.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, you'll have to ask him on Monday when I won't be here if he did that. But since you're here, let's talk about La Liga. Real Madrid went down to 10 men, lost to Levante. And I saw some highlights. It just seemed to me, that everyone just fell over, you know, all the time. Lots of people pretending to get punched in the face.
Yeah, it was a really, really ugly game. And I think it was ugly to some extent because of the nature of the two teams, in the sense that Levante obviously have virtually no good players and Real Madrid have virtually all the good players in La Liga that don't play for Barcelona. And Levante, to use the euphemism, played to their strengths, which meant they were very, very defensive, very deep and very nasty at times when they needed to be. There's a comment, a brilliant comment from Mourinho after the game, which I'm still trying to decide, and I've listened to it two or three times based on the tone, whether it's actually partly really is a eulogy, as he makes it sound like, but clearly it's sarcastic. He says after the game, I have to congratulate them because they succeeded in doing the things that are also football. They were very good at the dirty part of football. They were very clever when it came to knowing how to provoke, knowing how to simulate, knowing how to not give the ball back, and that's football too. Now, obviously, that sounds like a big win for Mourinho, and in very basic terms, it is. But I just wonder if there was a sneaking respect as well, because, of course, those are all skills that Mourinho himself has employed to a greater or lesser extent over the years.
Barca, their crisis is over, spanking Osasuna 8-0.
Yeah, and a very, very significant, the kind of whole build-up for this. Everybody knows, of course, that they blew a 2-0 lead and drew 2-2 with Real Sociedad last weekend, that they blew a 2-1 lead and drew 2-2 with Milan. And that created this sort of sensation of there being something very seriously wrong with Barcelona. Guardiola, in his press conference before the weekend, I thought, I must say, was a bit petty and a little bit over tetchy about some of the things that have been said in the media, because some of them, I think, were fair comment. There was a lot of talk about, did they need to have signed a defender during the summer? Are they actually making mistakes beyond simply the bad luck of completely dominating two teams and then not being able to finish the game off? And Guardiola came out fighting a little bit, and I think he saw a certain degree of, I don't know what you'd call it, a certain degree of campaign against his team. And he came out and he said, right, okay, here we go. This is what I'm going to say to you. We will not win anything this year. And he was clearly quite angry. Then he realised what he said and he sort of backed away from it and said, well, what I mean by that is I never promised that we will win anything, which is only partly true because he indirectly promised that they would win the Champions League last year. But his point was that I don't promise we'll win anything. I'll just promise that we'll keep on playing. But if you lot want a headline, here's your headline. We won't win anything this year. And there was this real sense of Guardiola having been riled a little bit by what had been said in the media over the two or three days between the Milan game and this weekend, that he was a bit wound up. His team went out and I think were genuinely quite aggressive in the way they attacked. And sometimes Barcelona can be accused, I think, of playing very pretty football, but quite slow, quite conservative in some ways. This time they absolutely went for Osasuna. 1-8-0, first time they scored 8 at home since 1996 against Logroñés. And after the game, the response from Mendilibar, the coach of Osasuna, was brilliant. He said, well, that's what you get for going on about a crisis. Damn crisis. We just made them angry. We just pissed them off. Now that happened.
Can you put it in perspective? Are Osasuna completely rubbish? Or are they all right?
No, they're not. This is one of the things that makes this striking. Osasuna are normally very competitive. They're not a rubbish side at all, particularly at home. But one thing that is true, if we're going to kind of look at it from a tactical point of view, Mendilibar, the coach, does have something of a habit of encouraging his teams to play suicidally high up the pitch. They really try and push and win the ball high. And obviously, against some teams, that works. Against really good teams, there's a massive amount of space behind them to take advantage of. And Barcelona did that. They played basically Barcelona with Cesc Fabregas and Leo Messi, almost as their, both of them as their false number nines. And they were brilliant, the pair of them.
Sid, I watched Athletic Bilbao lose against Betis last night, which was a very enjoyable game. But is Bielsa in trouble already at Bilbao?
I think he was helped a lot by the fact that they played very well in the Europa League in midweek and played a bit to his style. But there's really big questions over Bielsa, because essentially what he's trying to do is change a style and a tradition at Athletic Bilbao that's gone back well over 100 years, that he now wants them playing a much more technical game, much less direct. And Athletic Bilbao is kind of almost self-consciously English in a lot of what they do. You know, it's a wet part of the country. The pitch tends to be fast, but also quite heavy and soft. They play quite direct. They've always famously had huge animals as centre-backs and centre-forwards, and now they're trying to play a technical style. And there is a slight feeling, I think, in Bilbao that Bielsa is trying to change too much too quick. Some of the decisions are quite bizarre. Oscar de Marcos, who's a forward, has been playing at right back. We haven't seen as much of people like Andoni Iraola as we'd have liked. Fernando Llorente, a great striker, who they're no longer playing to his strength. So I think he's under pressure, but I also think there's a realism that says, OK, if someone's trying to create something and create something different, we need to give him time. Of course, time's the last thing that fans normally have. You know, patience is not normally their strong point.
Sid out in Madrid. We'll continue our European roundup talking about Italian football very briefly, because it's Jimbo's expertise. I don't want to tread on his toes any more than that. Also, no, pretty much nothing about it. But it says on my piece of paper here that you have a crush, Barry, on Napoli player Cavani, who scored a hat-trick.
Yeah, well, I announced my lust for Cavani last Thursday, and he obviously got wind of it and rewarded me with a hat-trick.
I think he did it just for you.
I think
so. Did he have a T-shirt?
I wish. If he would have had pulled up his jersey to reveal a T-shirt with my face on it, dedicating his hat-trick to me, that I'd have been very, very happy man.
How likely do you think that was of happening?
Quite not small. Very likely at all.
We try and make
keep
it happen.
Keep on wishing.
And into June 0-0 with Roma. So apparently,
speaking of crushes, actually,
I thought
the Emmys were. I was looking at the Emmys, and on the red carpet on the way in, Hollywood starlet Jessica Lowndes was looking resplendent in a gold dress with sequins on it.
Yeah, that's
you
nice
have form with Hollywood star Jessica Lowndes, don't you?
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, we're not really talking anymore.
Right.
It's form, what you call it nowadays.
Well, he was romantically linked with her in the Daily Mail. They were sunbathing on Primrose Hill.
Mm. I won the Sun's bizarre column, Punching Above His Weight, which I was particularly pleased with. Jess and I are just friends. Well, if I say we're just friends, she doesn't seem to be talking to me anymore.
Jess and I are not even friends.
Jess and I are not even friends. But she's very nice. I say that. But, you know, I think it was probably only right. We didn't have a whole lot in common. I think that's fair to say. She liked cupcakes a bit more than I did.
Saying she's fat.
It's not a euphemism. It's just true.
Have you thought of relocating to LA? Kind of casting yourself as the next Jason Statham or something?
I thought I'd give it a go.
Yeah,
I mean, I did.
When we first met,
I thought, you know what? I could go to LA. I mean, I don't know if I could afford to, but I could, like, timing wise, get out to LA.
Jeez,
quite
I'd
a
crawl
lot.
Across 3,000 miles of broken glass.
What's very difficult, when I was sort of having a debrief with myself about this, which is not a euphemism at all, was that it was very difficult when someone's so beautiful, it's all very frightfully competitive, and there's always so many, you know, there's always so many people trying to chase them that I, you know, you'd have to be really keen for it the whole time, and I'd get a bit tired.
Yeah, I always found that with my mother.
What?
How do you mean? I wonder where that was going to go.
Yeah, no, sorry, I thought we were having Freudian analysis here. No, apparently not.
It's dangerous when someone from Norwich says something like that.
Exactly. So, yeah, no, it's all over, Barry, but, like, thanks for your thanks for your public concern.
No, I'm take my hat off to you. I'm not wearing a hat.
Do you know what? I've got more respect in the Soccer AM office for that than for anything I'd done remotely near a TV camera. Probably fair enough as well. Should we preview the Carling Cup fixtures?
Yeah, I mean,
oh, we have to talk about the Old Firm derby, I'm told. Who wants to talk about that? Stunned silence.
I could talk about it.
I saw up until the Spurs game started.
Well, Rangers won the Old Firm derby. They were 2-1 down at half time after Alan McGregor had a shocker, let one in through his legs. And then Rangers came back and sort of ended up winning 4-2. And
Does that decide the title?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean,
times,
it was at Ibrox, so they have another three meetings, so Celtic could still reel them in. But yeah, it was a good victory and an important one for Ali McCoist, I think, because it was his first first Old Firm match in charge as manager of Rangers.
I listened to a bit of it on Radio 5. A lot of the commentary was about how amazing the Old Firm derby is. Like getting an English commentator going up and saying, like, it's amazing, the fans are great, and his analyst saying, oh, well, you should see it, sometimes it's so noisy that you can't hear yourself think.
You don't even have to look at the players, which is fortunate.
There was a lot of commentating about the Old Firm as an institution rather than the match that puzzled me a bit.
Shall we preview the Carling Cup? I've picked out a few games this week. Arsenal-Shrewsbury. If Arsenal lose this, what happens to Arsene Wenger?
I don't think Arsene Wenger will be fired ever, and he's said he's not going to quit. Shrewsbury are going to really fancy their chances, and it'll be interesting to see what...
Are they really going to fancy their chances? That was a great sentence, but really?
Oh, yeah.
Surely it's far more likely they'll win 4-0 and one 18-year-old you've never heard of will score a nice dribble and they'll go,
that's the
next generation coming through.
It'll be interesting to see what kind of team Wenger puts out, I suppose. I mean, there's quite a few mouth-watering...
Because would you put out kids because then if you do lose, it's not as bad? Or do you put your first team out and then if you lose, it's...
There's no way he'll put out his first team against Shrewsbury in an early round to the Carling Cup.
Yeah, he's got his committed policy.
Yeah. And surely he won't lose. And if he does lose, then he will deserve to get tickled a lot for a long period of time.
But by you dressed as a bear?
Possibly.
Leeds Man United. Now you at The Guardian are not allowed to Elland Road because you've upset Ken Bates. Is that a legal dispute?
Well, a lot of people have upset Ken Bates and they're still allowed to go to Elland Road. And Leeds fans who, I believe, Ken Bates called them all morons in his programme notes a couple of weeks ago. So the Leeds fans, I believe, on Saturday were singing rousing renditions of I'd Rather Be a Moron Than a C***. But which I thought, hats off to them for that. That's a great song.
Just a quick question. Can't you just buy a ticket and just stand in the home end? Or as Ken Bates got photos of every single Guardian journalist.
I think David Conn's photo is stuck up on the walls of all the ticket booths.
Are you this man?
He's like Jason Bourne. He has to go with multiple identities.
What happens if you report on it? I mean, what is it? I don't understand. Is it private property? Or are you guys not the experts on that?
Well, I suppose if it's his football club, he can say who is and isn't allowed in, and no one from The Guardian is allowed in. I mean...
And you could do it. You could get in.
Oh, you could
do
go.
It, but you'd just be in even more trouble afterwards, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, just do it again. I mean, what happened? I don't understand. Anyway, Leeds, mate, it is always a great game. Leeds, it was a great game. It's always hyped. And Leeds won at United in the Cup, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Jermaine Beckford.
Yes, that's right.
A couple of years ago.
And they've hit a little bit of form recently, Leeds. Ross McCormack has started scoring for them again. They bought him a year ago and he had a largely absent season last year. But he scored the winner at the weekend. They're robust, they'll give him a game. But I think the thing about United is United's squad, they don't really have a distinction between kids and senior pros. You know, as has been observed, a lot of the senior pros in this team are kids. The second team he's likely to play against Leeds will involve bringing in England internationals like Michael Carrick. It's difficult to kind of catch United too far off their average level, I think, nowadays.
And Brighton-Liverpool. Brighton doing very well. They lost the weekend, didn't they? But
it was against Leicester. Yeah. And they had their chances. Craig McCall-Smith missed a couple. I think... be a tough game for Liverpool. It will be a tough game.
That really jumps out as the tie of the round, I think.
You mean Aldershot and Rochdale isn't floating your boat?
I'm sure that'll be very exciting too.
You going to go to Aldershot, Rochdale, Barry?
No.
Okay. Quickly, for the end of part two, Plymouth sacked Peter Reid. Peter Ridsdale sacked Peter Reid. He did write something saying, look, Peter's been absolutely great for this club and we owe him a great deal. And the fact that, he sold. Well,
they owe him a great deal of money, I think, for a start, because as far as I know, Reid dug into his own pocket to pay some of the utility bills at Argyle last season.
And sold some
medals. He auctioned off
a
medal to help pay youth players or something. And you know, he may not be the world's greatest manager, but he seems to be a thoroughly nice bloke and deserves a lot better than the shabby treatment he got.
A bit of a patsy there, and you've got to feel sorry for him a little bit. That, given the financial constraints that were placed upon him, the times that he led the club through, there wasn't much he could have done in the last couple of years, and they are where they are now. I think that you could make an argument for the fact that he's kind of, they've lost their last eight games, and perhaps someone else could come in and improve this group of players. And there's a feeling among Plymouth fans that he's made some poor tactical decisions this season, and there's a lot of sympathy for him, but this is probably
does sentiment have to go out of the way? I mean, at what point, as a manager, if you stop putting your own money in, does it suddenly mean actually you can't be fired?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, though, that listening to what Peter Ridsdale has to say, a man who has never been held accountable for anything, really. He says, ultimately, whatever the challenge is, football is a results business. So, you know, that's it. You haven't been getting the results. Eight games into the season, trimmed the wage bill in half, got rid of however many players. I mean,
I think it's over 20 players he's had to get rid of.
You know, how long? Surely, kind of, even in a results-based business, eight games is not enough time for somebody to rebuild a team like that.
I mean, I saw Plymouth playing Barnet last week. Myself and Doherty were at it, and they were abject. It was like just kicking it to the corners and trying to chase, get crosses in, but they never looked.
I'm a Cambridge fan. You know, I watched us be very successful doing that for a long, long time.
John Beck.
But who's going to take that job? You'd have to be pretty desperate, wouldn't
you? Their keeper said he'll stand in.
The French guy, Larry.
Yeah.
I noticed he wasn't playing on Saturday. I don't know if he was injured or dropped.
Getting his UEFA B badges, probably.
Yeah, but yeah,
I think
Reid is probably better off out of there because he's only going to damage his reputation if they keep getting beat.
His reputation is pretty much done for. And the fact that he'll be regretting ever taking that job, because now he's led a club down two divisions to the very bottom of the Football League. And what is his next job? However blameless he is, really, however much Alex Ferguson would probably have struggled to do much better. Who employs him next?
National Association of Bhutan.
That's the end of part two. Let's end it quickly. In part three, we'll just talk about the rest of the weekend's football, and we'll talk about any other business. Right, welcome back to part three of Football Weekly. I'm still Max. Let's talk about the rest of the Premier League. We've touched on Arsenal already, but the Blackburn game was pretty disastrous for them. Simon?
Felt a bit sorry for him. I mean, they could have won that game, and it would have been... the talk of crisis would have been dispelled for another few days. But they didn't.
That's why you download this for expert analysis.
Well, I have no sympathy for them.
That's the truth, though, isn't it? I mean, they looked ropey that second half. I mean, it's just, you know, for all the good play in the first half, the second half was absolutely typical Arsenal. Totally milky defending all over the place. Couple of unfortunate events and no spirit to get back
but
in.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, I watched the first half and then I play Saturday afternoons at a very low level. And somebody in the dressing room just went, oh, they lost 4-2. I couldn't believe it, because...
You couldn't? Seriously couldn't believe it?
Well, I just thought they were playing well, and they went 2-1 up, and I thought, well, Blackburn aren't that great, are they? I just presumed Arsenal would go on, because I suppose I'm used to Arsenal doing that.
I actually... I checked the score on a new electrical device that I was given for my birthday.
By your daughter?
And I actually thought it was broken. I actually thought, oh, I've downloaded the wrong thing here. Like, this app ain't working.
Were you dressed as a bear at the time?
I was totally... I was in civvies at the time. Okay, I wasn't dressed as a bear at all.
Mode.
It made no sense to me.
I just don't understand how you can all think that after two seasons of them just throwing away positive positions time and time again. That is what Arsenal do nowadays, you know.
How do you explain? Well, I'm not expecting you to explain, but can you offer a suggestion as to why a team that played as well as they did in the first half just came out and were like dismal in the second? What's happening?
Well, mainly because Blackburn started playing to their strengths and Arsenal's weaknesses, which was turning that back four or driving balls across the box, which Arsenal just can't
defend. Did Arsenal look up? You look at was it the fourth goal? And Giroud tries some he's got two choices. He either just stays on his feet, or he just completely kicks that guy out of the stand and he lets him past him, and then Song is weak as well, and then it's an own goal. It just looked like what we were saying it a bit before about no, was it no Chelsea players hurling themselves at the ball? Were there any Arsenal players who looked like they really wanted to do that?
I think lack of heart is a big problem there. They're a bit gutless in the face of adversity and don't have many players prepared to roll their sleeves up and grab the games by the scruff of the neck. And particularly since Fabregas is gone. But there's talk now, Arsenal fans saying, oh, they need to bring in a defensive coach because they've got these new defenders and they aren't gelling properly. And there's been talk of Martin Keown possibly getting involved. But Arsblog, the sort of leader of Arsenal-related bloggery, he's made the point today, I see, that Steve Bould is on the coaching staff at Arsenal. He's the youth team coach and has, you know, is sort of a connection to the George Graham era. He was part of that famously tight back four. So Arsblog was suggesting that perhaps he should, you know, be given a promotion within the ranks to try and sort out.
We'll just get them all back.
Yeah.
Just stand there.
And play them. I think Alexander Song had a really dominant game against Dortmund in the middle of the week. And I think they do have players who can mix it up. Frimpong being another for example. They don't have anybody who is a vocal leader of the team. And I think that when Arsenal are on it, they are competitive and combative. When they concede, when they have a setback, they don't have the mental strength to keep that level up. And they don't have anybody who tells them to act that way. You know, I kind of wonder what would have happened to Arsenal if they had signed maybe even Scott Parker, but certainly like gone for Joey Barton. They had somebody who really, really does not let anybody off their toes. You know, there'll be controversy with it, but I wonder whether they might not have benefited from somebody like that.
Neil Warnock said that Joey Barton could get in any of the top four teams. Do we agree with that? He looked good again at Wolves.
I don't think anyone disputes he's a good player. I mean, people have a go at him for certain incidents in his past and things, you know, he's a habit of shooting his mouth off, sometimes ill-advisedly, but generally it's quite entertaining. His latest spats with Carl Henry, who said that Barton spent the afternoon in the game against Wolves boasting about how much money he earns. Bellamy was accused of doing that before when he was playing for Celtic. I remember some Hibs or Kilmarnock player or something said he spent the whole game just bragging about his wages, which I find astonishing. But, I mean, I don't earn enough to brag about.
They could all say, well,
mine,
I do all right as well. But, I like Joey. I mean, Joey is really, he's great on Twitter. He went to I just saw him tweeting about the Tate Modern the other day.
Well, I was going to say, that kind of gives the light of his whole kind of, I'm the new urbane London sophisticat. All I do is go to galleries and talk about the theatre. Oh, and by the way, I earn £120,000 a week and you don't get none of that.
I did reply to him saying, look, what's in the turbine hall? Is it still the little beans? You know, he's among a huge list of footballers and celebrities who don't tweet me back. So
him and Jessica Lowndes.
Jess doesn't anymore. She did at one point, but, you know, we can gloss over that. So how well do we think QPR are going to do?
I'm as loath as I am to say it because I feel cheated by the fact that they've got loads of money. Because I think, you know, they must be paying, I was talking to the QPR friend of mine this morning, they must be paying £70,000, £80,000 a week to three or four at least of these close-season signings.
Well, I think Barton's boast was to the tune of £80,000.
Right. And you look at that team and that's a Premiership team, pretty much. I think Sean Wright-Phillips has started, hit the ground running, Barton's hit the ground running, Traore even looked like a player at the weekend. And I think still having Derry in there, keeping everybody grounded, I think they'll probably be fine.
But are you saying, unfortunately, as a Norwich fan?
As a Norwich fan, the more teams in our mini league, the better. But yeah.
And what did you make of your own win?
Not that impressive, I thought, but well organised. Really,
you should
well
have
organized.
Had that. Who was the guy who should have got sent off for
Leon Barnett
nailing?
Was the one who
Barnett,
then went
and
thought, I didn't get done for that, so I'll go and do something similar again, but in our own penalty area. But he was brilliant, actually. I think he played really well. They were pumping a lot of ball into our box and he was winning it all the time. So I thought he was all right. I thought we were well organised. We changed our shape again. We changed six personnel.
Steve Morrison looks great. I mean, I saw him playing against Cambridge for Stevenage, 2 years ago? Uh-huh. 3 years ago?
Yeah.
That's amazing, right?
Yeah. He still hasn't quite shown much of a finishing instinct yet. He's holds the ball up well. He's obviously... He brings the fight to the defence, but we don't seem to have anybody right now who's going to put the ball in the back of the net.
Interesting that Grant Holt was on the bench.
Yeah.
And Morrison wasn't. And Morrison being the new signing and having had, I mean, Holt had such great impact last year.
Yeah, but he'll be back. I'm pretty sure they'll all be back. The guy, we ended up playing this guy, Russell Martin, at centre-half on Saturday, who was our right back last year, who we used to call the Norfolk Cafu. And he got rinsed by Victor Moses on the first game of the season, and he's been dropped, and he's not even been on the bench, and everyone thought, oh, that's it, he's out. But he's now back playing centre-half and had a really commanding game. Grant will be back. Grant came on for 15 minutes at the end and just had the ball in the far corner for about half of that time. It was just total time-wasting. Premiership experience, or Nels, or whatever you call it. So I was happy to see it. But no, we were well organised. We weren't particularly dazzling. I mean, Swansea looked like they were playing beautiful football. Mm-hmm. That Leon Britton. I think, you know, we've got Wes Houlihan, they've got Liam Britton. I think they're going to be very key players for both sides. But they've got real pace. Sinclair, great player. And I thought when they signed Leroy Lita, I thought that's probably somebody we should have gone in for because he's done it before at this level.
Just one question. Norwich, how many penalties in a row have they...
That's a record. We've got premiership
Is it five
record.
In a row, five matches in a
yeah,
row?
Yeah, that's the first time that's ever happened. First five games in the Premier League.
Have they scored all of them?
No, we saved two, I think. One against Stoke, and then last week's one against West Brom.
I don't have the figures to hand, but there's quite a lot of penalties that have been missed in the Premier League this season.
Yeah.
And we haven't talked about Rooney's miss.
No,
which, well, I think he just slipped, didn't he?
He fell over.
His foot went from
who'd you blame? Who'd you somebody's got to be blamed. Who'd you blame for that?
Boot well, manufacturers?
Is it the groundsman?
Not giving him longer studs or blades.
I played at Old Trafford a couple of years ago. Oh, it's quite... Yeah. Sorry, but... It was
a celebrity. For that fact. You've been polite all the way along.
Hey, look, it was a inverted commas celebrity game. It was the budget soccer raid. You know, I'm not quite famous enough to do that. And I'd say the service was pretty good in my review of it. So, you know, maybe it's his studs.
Who was on your team?
Who did we have?
John Bishop.
No, we didn't have John Bishop.
Angus Deaton, Patrick Keelty.
It's the usual suspects.
David Gray.
Dave Besant was in goal. Andy Cole. Ian Rush. And Andy Cole was in the Oppo.
These are actual footballers. They're not celebrities at all.
Yeah, well, it was a mix. It wasn't just me and some footballers. Ronan Keating and Ollie Murs were playing for the opposition. Which is good, because if after the game you walked off, loads of Greek girls just screamed and you just felt quite popular for a short amount of time.
Is Ollie Murs any good at football?
He's all right, yeah. He was all right. Tingy Strider was quite good.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Low centre of gravity.
Yeah, good touch. And Ralph Little thinks he's the best player in the world, even when Solskjaer and Dwight York are on the pitch, he thinks he's better than them. Right, that's it. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for coming in.
No, that's all right. And we'll be back on Thursday.
Great.
All right.
Yes. Fine
yes.
by me.
Yeah, all right.
You can come back on Thursday.
See you later.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.